them.
Good afternoon. It's 12:07, and you're tuned to Midday Matters Outer Spaces here on WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beeter. Very glad to be with you on this Thursday afternoon. Joining me back after going to the depths during Valentine's Day.
Oh, man, did we?
It's Doug Hackbarth. Doug, were you busy?
I forgot I wasn't here last week. That's right. It was Valentine's Day. Man, it was crazy busy.
Well, that's good news.
It's good news for the economy, because I'm telling you, it's coming back. It seems to be coming back. I think everyone wants to hear that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and you know what? Lots of folks, if you can afford to show a little love, then it sounds like people are doing it through flowers. Yeah.
And of course, a lot of factors cause Valentine's Day to be good. Number one, it's in the middle of the week. Weekends and Sundays and Mondays are not good. And then also the weather was good. When the weather cooperates, hey, when you have 6 inches of snow in the ground, nobody's thinking about Valentine's Day. Now they're thinking about, how do I get home? How do I get to work? How do I shovel the snow?
Sure.
You know, and Valentine's Day goes by the wayside. So a lot of factors bring it in. And a lot of people think it's funny that we in the business say that weekend Valentine's Days are bad and weekdays are good, but people want to send flowers to the office. Mm-hmm. And so they don't send flowers to the office on Saturday or Sunday. And on Monday, they didn't have enough days ahead of time to think in advance. They need less than 2 days to think in advance. Yeah. And so that doesn't work either. I found out restaurants too prefer weekday Valentine's Days. And here's the reason why. It's kind of cool. They're already busy on Friday, Saturday.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes
sense. So they want to be busy on Tuesday, Wednesday, any other day but Friday, Saturday, because they already have that in the bag. So this gives them an extra holiday, and so it works for restaurants the same way.
Well, this, of course, is not the culinary edition of Midday Matters. It's the Outer Spaces edition of our program, and Doug is here to answer your plant and garden questions. We also just want to hear what's going on in your backyard. The weather's been up and down, warmer and cooler. How are things looking in your outer spaces on this afternoon? Give us a call. Share your thoughts or your questions or comments, 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll-free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Doug, we have a caller on the line already.
Let's go to it.
I do want to let folks know a little bit later in the program, we'll be talking about finally getting started on getting some seeds in.
Yeah, you know, people are always wanting to plant seeds, especially tomato plants. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly saying, it's too early, it's too early, it's too early. Well, guess what? It's still too early for tomatoes, but it's not too early for a lot of things.
And we'll talk.
And that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that in just a little bit. First, though, let's open the phones and go to Darla. Darla, are you with us?
Absolutely.
Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to let you know I work at a home improvement center. But I'm in the garden center, and we've got shipments slated for March 15th.
March 15th.
So,
all right.
Yeah.
Getting folks excited.
You know, Marla, it makes you wonder if they're basing that on the weather we had last year, because that was crazy early last year.
I kind of have an inkling about that.
Yeah, I told customers that were coming out too early. I said, you know, you people are coming out here for these plants, and you know, the Home Depots and the Menards and all of those places, they don't have the stuff yet. Why would you think we would have it? Because you guys are usually early. So, your name's Darla. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's Darla. That's Marla. Fine.
Right.
That was close.
Well, go ahead with your question.
Okay. My question is, I'm a fairly seasoned gardener. I've been doing this since I was a little kid. But I have worked in many garden centers and nurseries. But I'm going to venture into something that I have not done before. And common sense tells me how to do it. But I wanted your opinion. And it's just me and a shovel. Okay,
uh-huh.
So I'm not going to have any help with this, but I have about 15 to 16 mature dwarf weeping trees, okay, that I need to take out of my old yard, put them in containers, and they've got to stay in those containers until I find another place for them. And I want 100% success rate. I absolutely would just die if I lose any of these guys.
And how big are these trees now?
Well, they're weeping like 15 to they're mature trees. They're like close to 15 years old. Most of them are less than 5 foot tall. I've got a couple weeping contorted cherries, a purple fountain beech, Japanese maple, a pretty good sized weeping mulberry, Norway spruce, you know, along that size. They're, you know, just about my height. They're kind of short. They're about less than 6 foot tall generally, and some of them are close to 3 foot tall.
Well, do you have an unheated garage or a storage shed?
I don't. All I have is the large buckets that I've saved, I think they're 35 to 55 gallon buckets that trees came in when I've worked at other garden centers, and I've taken them home. I have those, or I could do ball and burlap, but I don't really have the place to heel them in.
Yeah, the buckets probably aren't going to be big enough. Heeling them in would be an okay thing, but here's the deal. If you wait to dig those up in April or so, the plants are going to start budding, growing, leafing. And you will damage the plants to the point where they may not function properly the first year, and you'd have to wait a whole year to get them back on schedule. Yeah. If you could dig them up now while they're dormant, that would be super, because you can probably do it and not cause any damage at all. But the problem is you have to have a place to store these things, and outside is probably not the best place. However, you could dig them up and store them, and it's kind of like heeling them into the ground, but store, you don't even have to put them in the ground. If you have a big ball of roots, you can put them right up next to the house on some side that maybe you don't have a lot of landscaping or whatnot. Put them close to the house, lean them up against the house, and then maybe get some soil and just mound soil right over that root system. That would be helpful. And then later on, when they do start to leaf or bud or whatever it is they're going to do, you will be able to pull them out of that spot without messing them up at all and planting them, and you'll have no trouble at all. But you, I think it would be better if you dug them up as soon as possible.
It sounds like it. It definitely sounds like I need to do that, and that's what I will do, because I just cannot lose any of these trees.
Right. That's what I would do.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll be on it tomorrow.
Very good. Well, you could wait till Saturday. It might be a little warmer. Tomorrow's supposed to be freezing rain.
I'll wait till Saturday.
All right.
Bye.
Darla,
thank
we
you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
260-452-1185 is the local line to call if you have a question or comment for Doug Hackbarth during this hour of Midday Matters. Of course, we also want to know just what's going on in your backyard today. What with the weather being up and down and warmer and cooler and wet and dry, share with us what you've been up to, what things are looking like back there. In the meantime, Doug, you brought along a topic I imagine a lot of our listeners have probably been waiting for you.
Oh, yeah.
To bring along a little bit of good news, perhaps.
Well, that's it. You know, people are so anxious to plant seeds. I get so many phone calls all week long. Can I plant these yet? Can I plant those? And it's usually I say no, but it's not too early. If you're going to sow seeds inside for outside planting, it's not too early to plant right now all of the cold crops, which would be cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and even onions. You could plant those now. There's a few items that you actually could have planted earlier this month or even late January, and that would have just been pansies. See, we're not even talking veggies here. Pansies and possibly petunias, too, is another flower that you could do right away because they're a little slow growing. Mm. So these are things that you could plant now, the cold crops. And later on, and I'm talking a whole month from now, you got to wait till late March, the last week, or the 1st of April, and that's when you start things such as the tomatoes, the peppers, the eggplant. All right? But there's different ways of doing things, and you need to know all of those, and that is these cool crops that you plant. They germinate best at a cool temperature too. So you're going to want to run those somewhere around 58 degrees, even for germination.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Whereas a lot of the warm flowers and whatnot that you do and the warm vegetables that you do later, they prefer closer to 68 degrees, 68 to 70 for germination. And this is what you need to do is you need to figure out, okay, if I'm going to plant these things, where can I grow them where it's not too warm? And yeah, well, you'll get faster growth if it's warm. Faster growth's not always the best thing for a plant. Sometimes it's too fast and you get stretched out plants, pale, weak, spindly.
Hmm.
We've all seen them because you know what? We've all done
we've all experienced Well, you want to get to that end goal a little faster.
Absolutely.
Sometimes, but it'll result in maybe a slightly less healthy
Absolutely.
Plant.
Absolutely. But you want to use, you know, as long as there's no callers or emailers, I'll talk on, but you want to use good soil. You want to use this artificial potting media. Years and years ago, I'm talking back in the 60s, you didn't have this stuff. It was just starting to come out, like mm-hmm. Ready Earth. Ready Earth's a thing of the past. But everything that you can buy these days is kind of a playoff of what used to be called Ready Earth. And it's a combination of peat moss, vermiculite, and perlite, basically. And different companies mix it slightly different, but they're all pretty much the same. I try to avoid the ones that advertise that they have fertilizer in them, because that's not always good on your seedlings. You can fertilize seedlings after you've transplanted
mm-hmm.
at half strength the rate. But you can also damage things with fertilizer.
That's interesting. I think growing up, I mean, I thought that fertilizer was just was all through the process.
Medicine.
Medicine. Exactly.
Everybody medicine. Says it's medicine, right?
It's a little steroid that'll get it kick started or whatever. But you're saying
dangerous.
No. Seeds, fertilizer, and seeds don't necessarily mix.
I always said, no fertilizer on seedlings. But I did some investigative. And they're saying, yeah, after you transplant those little seedlings, and when do you transplant them? Just as soon as you possibly can. Once they germinate, you want to transplant them. You look for a pair of true leaves.
Mm-hmm.
When you see that, where you can actually grab a leaf and actually lift the seedling, that's when you transplant. So you want to get them started, and you want to plant your seeds thinly so they don't all come up in one spot. And then later on, when the true leaves are starting to show, you can pick up a little clump. You might use a little pot label or something to dig a small clump out and just sort of drop them on the table so they break apart. And then you pick them up by the one of the true leaves and you move them to another container. And you
Right.
will have to do this. You can't just go from planting seeds into some pot and then go straight to outside.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a period of time in between, and it's a fairly long period, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. You need to transplant.
I want to talk more about this in just a few minutes here,
yeah.
But Doug, we need to take a break. And in the meantime, we want our listeners to get in touch with us this hour. If you have a question or comment for Doug Hackbarth about your outer spaces, we'd love to hear it this hour. And we'd love to know what's going on in your backyard. Share your thoughts with us this hour. Get in touch, 260-452-1185 or toll free 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's @middaymatters. Stay with us. The conversation continues in just a few moments.
It's time to meet music.
Hi, I'm Julia Meek, and this Thursday it's Meet the Music Live and Lively. We're broadcasting live from C2G Music Hall, so come on down to hear and see great performances by Fred Rothert and Jill Mozina, Mark Maxwell's sax duo, and Fair Fiola. That's C2G Music Hall, 323 West Baker Street, just south of Parkview Field. Doors open at 6:30, show starts at 7. It's fun, it's free, and you're invited. We'll meet the music live, and we hope to see you there.
Filmmakers Andrea and Sean Fine have no problem exploring the dark side of childhood, like the plight of homeless teens in California.
We feel like every time we turn the camera on these kids, they just share and bare their soul in such an honest way that it transcends their stories.
The story behind their Oscar-nominated documentary, Innocente, later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, working together with 15 local early childhood and youth-serving organizations to help kids in the community be prepared for learning in school and beyond. UWEducationNetwork.org. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by ATM & Company, a CPA firm providing accounting, audit, tax, and consulting services to businesses and individuals in northeastern Indiana. Details at 490-ATMO.
It's 12:22. It's Midday Matters, Outer Spaces on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, along with Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florist. He survived Valentine's Day, and he's back here to take your questions and comments. Do give us a call if you have a question or comment, or if you'd like to share with us what your backyard is looking like these days. The number is 260-452-1185, or toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Currently, no messages in the digital hopper or in the phone bank, so if you get in touch with us, we'll be able to get you right through here. Doug, before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about getting some seeds started.
Yeah, you betcha. And like I said, the cold crops, right now, it's time, late February. The crops in March, the ones that you would do in mid-March to late March, those things, that would include eggplant, peppers, tomatoes. I'll say late March for tomatoes, but I always say April 1st. Here's the thing. You need to figure out and guess, when am I going to be able to put these things outside safely? Well, in this area, and this isn't a big help to you folks, but frost-free date in this area, Zone 5, is considered somewhere between May 1st and May 30th. Hmm. Woo-hoo!
Wow.
Yeah, that doesn't really narrow it down. So your guess is as good as mine. You have to figure, okay, well, let's just pick a date like Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and certainly we had on a more broad scale, kind of last year, a lot of fruit producers and folks trying to grow berries, things like that,
yeah.
Got burned frost-free date, or people who maybe planted crops early, yeah,
especially
got burned.
Michigan. They just didn't have that warm spell that we had. Not quite the same.
It's a difficult judgment call to make.
But. Absolutely. But, you know, you just have to figure, okay, let's just pick Mother's Day as the date and then back up 5 or 6 weeks for these things. And that takes you back to April 1st. Okay? So that's the key here. You want to, you can't figure out you're going to put these things out on the second week of April. It's insane to think that. And yet a lot of people do. And last year, I don't blame them for thinking it. We had an entire month of March was warm.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get that kind of stuff and you think, well, it's never going to get cold again. But it is.
Well,
or
welcome
it
to
should.
Northern Indiana.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Doug, I want to talk a little bit more about this as the hour goes on here. But we have a caller on the line.
Let's do it.
We'd like more folks to get in touch with us this hour. If you have a question or comment, 260-452-1185 or toll free at 800-471-9264. Let's open the phones and go to Scott. Scott, welcome to Midday Matters.
Well, thank you.
Hi, Scott.
My question is relatively simple. Last season, delphiniums are kind of difficult to find, especially the ones that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to be a biannual to me and less of a perennial. My question is, I saved probably 500 or 600 seeds from last year.
Yeah.
And specifically, when should I plant those, since, or when should I start those, based on the fact that they are maybe a biannual or a perennial, for that matter?
Well, you won't like my answer. You should have started them probably last fall, sometime late summer, early fall, where they could have gotten started. And then when wintertime hits, you could have, like, buried them a little bit with straw or something to protect those young seedlings. And then next spring, you would have had flowers. But now you didn't do that, so now you're behind the eight ball on this thing. And so this is what happens when you say they're sort of a biennial. That's because most of the time when you buy them, they're already budded or they have a stem and they haven't been in the ground. So it's not a very beautiful flower or stem. And if you wait until late May or June, they might even be finished. And that's true. They're finished. And then you got to wait till next year to get the really nice flower. But a lot of perennials are started in late summer or fall. They get a start, and it's like it saves you an entire year because you get them started in the fall, and then next spring it's a new year. Those few months through the fall and winter are the same as an entire year to this plant.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. But the reason that I say they feel like a biannual to me is that you're right. The first year that I, buy started plants and they bloom okay, then the next year they're amazing, and then the next year they're usually gone.
Dead. Well, this is the problem with delphiniums. A lot of perennials are not as hardy as you might think, and delphiniums are notoriously bad about surviving year after year. It's one of those plants that after a couple of years, if you get it to come on a third year, you're almost lucky. And so this is what you're experiencing, and it happens to delphiniums, and it does happen to other perennials. Some are incredibly hardy, and some are just mediocre hardy.
I have solved that problem a little bit in the sense that I always plant some every year.
Yes, that's a great idea.
I'm always planting delphiniums.
That's a great idea. And that's what happens too. You collected seeds, but a lot of times seeds fall off and then they start growing in the late fall, and you have that same routine where those particular plants survive.
On my mistake.
Yeah, right.
Would you say I should start these like ASAP and not worry about a bloom this year, but maybe expect something pretty nice by next year?
You could start them, but here's the thing. You have to start them very cool.
Okay. Or
you have to find a place where you can start these things in the mid-40s, low 40s.
Perfect. And I know exactly what I'm doing.
And don't expect fast growth because it is cold, but that's the way it has to be.
I can easily accomplish that task.
Good deal.
All right. You've been very helpful. And next year, I know to start the seeds a little earlier.
Yeah, start them in the fall. And you can do it right in your vegetable garden.
Yeah.
And then you could dig up the clump and move it in the spring. And you can move a small perennial without much damage. Not like the gal who had the trees. That's a different story.
Yeah, I've had great luck at sticking certain perennials in different spots, move them in the early spring, like end of March, April, and it's like you've never touched them. So
I know, right? It's great, and I love my vegetable garden for that reason. I use it as a holding place.
Yeah, I've done that with daylilies and all that sort of thing.
Sure, so garden mums. I've always done it with garden mums. Right.
Yeah. Well, all right. Hey, well, thank you,
Scott. Good luck, and thanks for the call.
Yeah.
All right. Bye bye. 260-452-1185 is the local line if you have a question or comment, or you can always call us toll-free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Of course, we have our Facebook and Twitter feeds up as well. Another caller on the line here. Let's go back to the phones and to Ken. Ken, welcome to Midday Matters.
Thank you.
Hi, Ken.
What is a good fertilizer for, say, boxwood and other evergreens, and what type of fertilizer does one use, and when do you start using it?
All right. When you go to the store, whatever store you decide to go to or garden center, you're going to want to look at the labels. And first off, look for some that's for acid fertilizer. Of course, Miracle-Gro calls it mir acid, and that MIR for the mir acid just means this is an abbreviation for Miracle-Gro. That's their catchphrase, just like Kleenex is actually facial tissue, but everyone calls everything Kleenex. Mir acid, it doesn't matter if it's not Miracle-Gro. It can be any kind of acid fertilizer. Also, if you read the labels, there's many of them that say they're for shrubs and rhododendrons and azaleas. You can use those. And then those are the kind you mix with water and pour on. And then there's also the granulated fertilizers, which are very easy to use because you just grab a handful and sprinkle them around on the ground. They're slow release. Every time it rains or if you water, it works. And those slow release types and the liquid types, you can use both at the same time, which means you could put a handful of granulated fertilizer out there just as soon as we have some spring rains. And then you could come back a week or so later and you could use the liquid kind, which I call the liquid kind a booster shot. It's not slow release, it's fast release. So it's a booster shot, but you want to have the granule type out there too so that it gets a little fertilizer every time it rains. So those are the two things to do. I don't care what the brand is. Just okay. Look for the ones that say they're for shrubs and trees, and that's what you want.
How about Epsom salt?
Epsom salts is a great item. It's magnesium sulfate, and what it does, we use it on geraniums, tomatoes, poinsettias. We use it on all kinds of plants, and what it does is it greens the plants up. It's just an additional source of magnesium sulfate, which is already in every fertilizer. However, it's in there very minutely, so if you want a booster shot of magnesium, you use Epsom salts, usually a couple tablespoons to a gallon of water, or you can just take a small handful and throw it around on the ground. Works just as well.
How often?
Yep. It's good stuff.
How often, Doug?
What do you say?
How often?
Oh, how often? Oh, monthly. Don't do it more than once a month.
Once a month.
Yeah,
okay.
That's enough. Yeah.
And these other acid fertilizers, are you recommending, say, once a month on those as well?
Well, read the label on the granules. They might say works for 4 to 6 weeks, which sounds about right. The liquid fertilizers, they work instantly when you use them. So every other week to every 3 weeks is plenty.
Okay.
I wouldn't do it every time I watered, but so, you know, every other week. And, you know, when you get, it's especially important to do it in the spring season. So as soon as you start seeing some of those spring rains, you want to do it. Once summer hits and it's drought, you kind of want to slack off of that stuff.
The Japanese maple, would you use acid or non-acid fertilizer?
I'd probably use acid. I'm also a big believer in using both kinds on everything because they all have different ingredients in them, the minute ingredients. And I'm real big about not using just one kind on everything. I like to use one kind one time and another kind. Or maybe I'll mix up a bucket of it and I'll use it until it's all gone. Then I'll mix up a bucket of something else and I'll use it until it's all gone. And so that way you get different trace elements. It's the trace elements such as magnesium sulfate that I'm talking about. So I'm not a real stickler about a particular type. I like them all, really.
Okay. That's a very good suggestion.
Yeah.
Thanks, Doug.
You bet.
Ken, good luck and have a great day. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Sean, I also like to use leftover fertilizer in a compost pile at the end of the season, especially the granulated stuff. You throw the leaves out there in the pile. You throw some soil in there from your garden.
Add a few extra nutrients to the
mix. And when you throw the leaves in there, you throw the fertilizer on top of it, and that helps break those leaves down faster and puts nitrogen in the soil. So that's a source for getting rid of the old fertilizer and then you get new fertilizer each spring.
That's not a bad idea. I'll probably start a compost pile in my apartment. So
in the living room.
We have time for one more caller before we have to go to the break. Let's open the phones and go to Carol. Carol, welcome to Midday Matters. You're on the air.
Hi. I had a pot of hens and chickens that I brought in for the winter, and most of them have died. Will those come back next year, or should I have left them outside?
Well, they'd probably have been happier outside. And the thing about them is, and then they like to be dry, too. And, you know, when you brought them in, you probably watered them and took care of them, which was a big mistake.
Okay.
these things love abuse. Are they dead? Probably a lot of them are, but maybe not all of them. You could take these things out of the pot, spread them all out, and go through them with your hands and feel them and see if they're mushy, see if there's any solidness left. They don't need hardly any roots whatsoever.
Yeah.
And you could take pots and you could water the soil that's in your pot that you put in it. Water it first and then just take these hens and chicks and shove them in the pot. And you can take large pots and put several in there, or you can take small pots and plant them individually. And I would probably get on that pretty soon so that you can get them outside when spring season hits. And then in the future, leave them outside, even if they're in pots.
Okay.
A lot of times we'd tell people perennials left in pots will die, but hens and chicks can hold up to anything except too much water.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
And Carol, have a great day. Thank you very much for the call. 260-452-1185 is the local line to call if you have a question or comment for Doug Hackbarth, or if you just want to share with us what's going on in your outer spaces these days. Of course, you can always call us toll-free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's @MiddayMatters. Currently, nobody in the phone bank, so if you give us a ring in the next few minutes, we'll try to get you right through. I do need to take a quick break for the news. Conversation continues when we return. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
Resuscitation medicine is bringing some people back from the dead after their heart has stopped. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Dr. Sam Parnia, who directs resuscitation medicine at the Stony Brook University School of Medicine, and is researching what people experience in that period after their heart has stopped, before they're resuscitated, what's often called near-death experiences. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah DeLeo with WBOY News. Indiana lawmakers are considering rolling back the state's 2-year-old immigration law so that illegal immigrants who were attending public colleges then would again be eligible for in-state tuition rates. An Indiana University official estimates it has about 200 current or former students who could be eligible. Bill sponsor Senator Gene Lysing of Oldenburg says the change would be a sign of fairness to those students, many of whom came to Indiana as young children. She says illegal immigrants still could not receive state college financial aid, and new students would not be eligible for in-state tuition. Some immigrant students told the Senate Education Committee on Wednesday that they had to quit college after their tuition bills tripled. The committee voted 8-4 to approve the bill, sending it to the full Senate. Proposed legislation that passed a Senate committee Wednesday places stricter regulation on the dispensing of the abortion-inducing drug known as RU486 and the clinics that provide it. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
Clinics that dispense RU486 would be required to have the same facilities as a surgical abortion center, including access to anesthesia, surgical equipment, and specific door and room sizes. Any physicians or facilities that do not typically dispense RU486 would be exempt. Evansville Republican Senator Vanita Becker says the bill will make it harder for women to safely access abortion-inducing drugs.
All this bill's going to do is to encourage low-income women to go to the internet. That way there won't be any type of follow-up care for them if they have a crisis.
Indiana Right to Life legislative director Sue Swayze says that's not the goal of the bill. She says what she wants is the best reproductive care for Hoosier women.
What I heard in there was she might go over the border, she might go on the internet, religious freedom, etc. We'd rather have lower standards than let her do those other things. So in other words, I don't hear, yes, we will adhere to higher standards.
Supporters and opponents of the bill say they know of only one Indiana facility that would be affected, a Planned Parenthood clinic in Lafayette. But Swayze says with the use of RU486 increasing, the bill would ensure more clinics don't dispense the drug without the proper facilities. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
A legislative committee has backed repealing the A through F grading scale for Indiana schools and having the State Board of Education develop a new system for tracking school improvement. The unanimous vote by the Republican-controlled Senate Education Committee on Wednesday came after new Democratic State School Superintendent Glenda Ritz said that she believes the system is flawed and inconsistent. Several educators testified about instances where their schools had consistently high student test scores, but the schools received low grades because students had not shown enough improvement. Ritz criticized the A through F system during her campaign last year, in which she defeated Republican Tony Bennett. He had backed the school grades that were issued for the first time in 2011. The bill now goes to the full Senate for consideration. You're listening to 89.1 FM WBOY. Now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
It's Midday Matters Outer Spaces on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, along with Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florist, and today we're taking your plant and garden questions, and we want to hear, well, just what's going on in your backyard. Have you been out working? Are you looking forward to getting out and getting your hands dirty? Share your thoughts with us this hour by giving us a call, 260-452-1185, or toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Doug Hackbarth and I have been taking your questions and comments. We've also been talking about getting some seeds started and what folks can get started on now, what they might have to wait for a little bit. And Doug, I want to continue that conversation in just a moment here. We do have a question. A caller called in and left a message with us. Janice has a question on how to keep her cilantro seedlings from being so spindly when growing inside.
Yeah, and I think she's already started them, which is fine. Cilantro is like parsley. Mm-hmm. And the thing about that is it's another one of those slow growers. You can easily do it from seed, but here's the thing. It's one of those that likes to be grown cool. Mm. So she's probably growing them way too warm. She needs to locate a nice spot that's in the mid to upper 40s and slow those babies down. And when you put them in a cold place like that, you got to stop way back on the watering. Okay?
So you're talking about like a garage or something like
but
that.
But you got to have light. Mm. You got to have light in all of these cases. And so that's always a key, too. To me, that's always been the hardest thing for you to come up with is a bright spot that's cold. You know, I mean, a greenhouse gets hot if the sun shines, and yet you need a bright spot that's cool. Mm. And I mentioned to you, do we have a caller?
Not yet.
Well, then
go
I'll
ahead.
Say it now. I mentioned to Sean at the last break that one thing I wanted to tell people is if they don't have enough light, they can use some fluorescence. And what you want to do is you want to get the twin set, you know, that holds the two tubes, and you want to use, something like 40 watt. And you want to use a soft white, and you want to use one of those grow lights. Those are great. If you'd use a tube in one socket and one tube in the other socket, you'll have the perfect combination. Because regular lights and fluorescents do not put out certain specter of colors that the grow lights put out.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, fluorescent lights, many plants don't respond particularly well to regular fluorescents.
They do not. It helps. It's always better than nothing. But if you use one of the tubes as a grow light, don't think, gee, if one tube as a grow light works good, let's just do them both that way. No, you need the combination of the soft white and or cool white and the fluorescent grow light, because that puts out pretty much all the specters in a rainbow and everything that the plants need to grow better. Mm-hmm. And then in her case, because she's doing cilantro, she needs a much cooler place. I'm sure she started them warm. They're growing like crazy.
Time to slow down a bit.
She needs to slow them down. This is one of those that could have been started at a much cooler temperature, right?
Janice, we appreciate the question. Thank you very much. And we want more folks to get in touch with us in the last 15 minutes of the program here. Two numbers to call, 260-452-1185 or toll-free at 800-471-9264. Doug, we've got a caller on the line here, so let's open the phones and go to Randy. Randy, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Typical problem I have every year, order roses for my wife, and we try to keep them nice, and they don't seem to last very long in the house. And I'm not sure if it's a matter of light or water or what, but the nicer the rose, they just, after a couple of days, it seems like the buds just kind of lay over and die.
These are cut flowers.
How do you keep the rose? Am I doing anything wrong?
We're talking cut flowers, correct?
Right, cut flowers. I always cut the bottom off and use the little packet of stuff they put in it and fill them with water, but they just, you know, they'll last a couple of days, but they don't seem to last 6 and 7 and 8 days like they're supposed to.
Well, I wish they would, because they should. They ought to last. I mean, they're only guaranteed for like 48 hours, but they should still last 4, 5, 6 days, maybe longer. And I hate it that you're having this trouble with your cut roses. And it sounds like you're doing everything right. You can give them a fresh cut, stick them back in fresh water. It's a good idea to change the water. Of course, once you put that stuff in there and you change it, you lose the stuff. But it's not as important as some people think. The stuff.
the yeah. stuff is that that's the, floral, that's the industry term for
I think
it.
It's called floral life, but it's a good thing to have, but it's not as important as some people put on it. I wish I could tell you what to do to make it right. I think for the most part, people have very good luck with roses. We have noticed that in the past few years, there's newer varieties of roses that do something that's a little odd. And let me tell you what that is. Most people think when they get roses, they should be tight buds, and then they open slowly, until they're absolutely wide open, and then they're shot. There's newer varieties now for some reason. I don't know whoever came up with the idea that people would like this. There's some varieties that they immediately pop wide open, and then people think they're shot, when in fact, now in your case, I think it is because you said they drooped. But they think they're shot, and in fact, this variety is bred to pop wide open and then last for a long time.
Wow.
And so we've had a couple of calls this year where someone did that, and we said, well, you keep them for a few more days, and you call us back. And they actually called back and said, no, they still look fabulous. So that's something, not in your case, I don't believe, because you said yours
wilted. Mine are opening a little bit, but one or two of the buds didn't even open very much. Yeah. They just kind of stopped where they
and
were
I'm,
at. And
I'm not going to ask you where you got them or anything else, but that can be part of it.
Well, and I've gotten different places. It's been a universal problem.
You've
that's
had
why
this,
I wanted to.
Yeah, you've had this problem.
At first I thought, and one thing I tried slightly different this time, I tried to put them in the window thinking maybe natural light would help them a little bit, but I don't know that I've seen a big difference.
Well, actually, the light isn't going to matter to them because they're not growing. When they're growing, light's the key. But once they're cut and in a vase, it doesn't really matter if they're in light or dark or where they're at. The temperature is a big key. Cooler temperatures help. So by putting them by the window, that should be a cooler spot. So that could have and should have helped, not for the light like you thought, but for the coolness.
For the temperature, yeah.
Yeah, and I wish I could give you some magical deal here because I don't know one.
I just wondered if there was a secret or something to it that I just wasn't doing right, so that was the reason.
There really isn't. You're doing it right and you're having bad luck. I feel bad for you. Mm-hmm. You bet.
Randy, we
appreciate... They're not bad. It just seems like they ought to do longer. 1 year I got the one from, I think it was Pro Flowers or whatever, that says, you know, they're guaranteed for 7 days. And And so I said, I'm going to take them up on that. So like 5 days, I sent them back and got the new ones. And of course, the new ones did the exact same thing. So
did you end up with a year of free flowers due to that?
I could have if I did it with a little more patience.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, and I'm not going to slam Pro Flowers or anything else.
Well, and they don't use, you know, Pro Flowers. They got different backgrounds. So I wasn't particularly picking on them, but it was just, you know, like I said, they say that they should last 7 days, and nothing seems to, I'm doing. So.
Well, we know that sometimes they don't last that long, but there's a better than even chance that they will last that long or longer. And we get a lot of people who say, gosh, I got these roses and they lasted, you know, I got them a week ago and they still look good. That happens a lot. We like to hear that. But then occasionally there is the instance that you're having, and you have it more than occasionally. You've been having it every year. And I feel bad for you. I don't know what the deal is. Mm-hmm. I really don't.
Well, and I presume that the roses, when you get them, I mean, they could have different backgrounds. In other words, some may have been freshly cut like yesterday and some may have been 2 months ago or whatever.
Yeah.
There could be all different kinds of backgrounds that you don't really have any control over, and even the florist may not have much control over.
Absolutely. And where are they stored? Because it usually with somebody like Pro Flowers, they're boxed. And how long have they been boxed? Do they get that stuff ready 5 days before Valentine's Day and store it in a cooler? I don't know. I just don't know. The right way for those flowers to be handled is to be in a bucket of water in a cooler until the minute they go to your house, which is the normal way a florist would do it. And Pro Flowers, I don't know their routine. I know they're the number one flower grower in the world because of advertising, but I don't know that they're number one quality. I just don't know that. Right.
Sure. Randy, we have to let you go here. Sorry about the roses, but better luck next time.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Just a few minutes, about 6 or 7 minutes left in the hour here. And if you have a question you'd like to get in, send us an email here, middaymatters@nipr.fm. Looks like we have a number of callers in the phone bank. Let's open the phones. Go to who do we have here? Susan. Susan, welcome to Midday Matters. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Yeah, my daughter is getting married in the Warsaw area on April 20th this year, and I'm wanting to do some landscaping out, kind of around. She's having an outdoor reception around a pavilion, and didn't know if there would be any plants or trees that I could safely plant that early.
You can plant anything that early. The problem is they're not going to look good.
Right.
They're all going to be just barely breaking out of dormancy, so... but yes, actually for trees and shrubs, early April to mid-April is a great time to plant them because they don't suffer at all.
Okay.
So the timing is fine, but you're just not going to have anything spectacular.
Yeah, they won't be all bloomed out. But...
No, but you might be able to find some that there are some early blooming things like cherries and whatnot that you might find that are... And you might plant them and they're not blooming. And the day of the wedding, boom, they'll pop into bloom and you'll be thrilled. Right?
That would be wonderful. Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, that could certainly happen. So ask wherever you get them exactly when are they supposed to bloom.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
That sounds good. Thank you.
Susan, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. 5 minutes left in the hour here. Let's get another caller on the line. Then we have some digital questions here as well. Let's go to the phones. We've got, Chris on the line. Chris, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to Midday Matters.
Well, thank you. Just a quick comment that I wanted to make was I'm one of the board members for the Northeast Indiana Beekeepers Association.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if your listeners would be interested in eventually having possibly a beekeeper on the air to discuss beekeeping problems or people who are interested in getting into beekeeping.
Chris, it's funny you say that. We're looking ahead to our spring shows, and it's a topic that's on our radar. So we'll if you send us an email here with your contact info, we can get in touch.
sounds fantastic. We do have a meeting tonight. It's our first meeting of the year that is targeted towards new beekeepers, and that would be at 7 o'clock tonight at the Classic Grill on Hillegas Road.
Sounds great.
Well, yeah, Chris, absolutely. Send an email here to middaymatters@nipr.fm, and we'll get in touch with you coming up here.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Doug, there's a whole lot more to our outer spaces here than just the handful of things we get to touch
bees,
on. Every
that's pollination, baby. That's a good topic.
And a whole lot of news the last few years on the bee front as well. We had another caller call in and leave a message with us. Joan called in wondering what kind of self-limiting tree she could plant in a cemetery that needs a lot of sun and would hopefully bloom.
Oh, there's just a lot of them. And I missed the first part of the question. What kind of self what?
Joan was wondering what kind of self-limiting tree she could plant in a cemetery that needs a lot of sun and would hopefully bloom.
Sure, and bloom. I would get a dwarf blooming tree, which, of course, you can get a dwarf crab, you can get a dwarf cherry. There's a lot of dwarf blooming trees, a magnolia, but they're not necessarily dwarf. They're not large growers. It takes a long time for them to get large, but if you have the space, a magnolia / tulip tree, something like that.
Mm-hmm. But, something, I've got a note here, between 5 and 8 feet tall, something like that.
Oh, yeah. Any of those would work well. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We have just about 2 minutes left in the program here, Doug. We've been talking over the course of the hour about getting some seeds started. Any final notes as we start to wrap up the hour here?
Well, one of the final notes that I had down was the items that really should not be planted or started from seed until the end of April, and that's the one that people they're always doing it wrong, and that would be cantaloupe, watermelon. Things like that, pumpkins, those things can be planted much, much later. Squash, okra even, and cucumbers. Those are the things that you don't want to plant till the end. And actually, it only takes a lot of those, about 3 weeks. You plant cantaloupe or cucumbers, 3 weeks later, they're ready to plant outside. So if you do it the 1st of May, by the 3rd week of May, they're ready to plant outside. And the problem with these things is you can't push them. They don't just worry about frost. They don't like cool weather. So there is no hurrying these things up, and don't plant them too early.
So as difficult as it might be, a little more patience will be needed. Doug, we have a last-minute question here getting in just under the wire from Lisa. Lisa wants to know if you have any suggestions for shade-loving flowering plants that tolerate dry ground under trees.
Shade-loving flowering
plants.
Well, of course, impatiens and begonias are notoriously popular for shade. These are plants that are shade tolerant. I'm glad she used the word tolerant because a lot of people say these plants love shade. Well, they don't.
And they tolerate. When we're talking about tolerating dry ground under trees.
Yeah, well, impatiens, they do not tolerate dryness, but begonias do. So begonias would be a good one. Coleus needs to dry out between waterings. Usually when you have rain, that's enough. But if you keep coleus too wet, they'll rot on you, especially in the shade. So, again, coleus and begonias are both great. But, of course, begonias would be my favorite. If you get any water at all, I would say impatiens. They're faster growing and that type of thing. So all of that.
All right. You bet. Lisa, good timing on that question. Thanks so much to everybody who got in touch with us this hour. And thanks, of course, to you for listening. Doug Hackbarth, thank you as well.
Hey, my pleasure.
I'm John Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1, streaming online at nipr.fm. It's WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester. Stay with us. Fresh Air is up next. It's 1 o'clock.